Monday, May 4th. Early this morning, I talked to Bess about music, refreshments, general logistics of the tea on May 7th. Took a look at my list of acceptances, finding it gratifyingly high. Called Bill Walton of the Fine Arts Commission to see if there was anything in the fine print that said I couldn't move the Waterford chandelier from the family dining room back down to the green room where it hung originally. He said there wasn't, so I got Mr. West busy moving it right away. But alas, it looks like such an involved job. The one in the green room will probably be in place tonight for the labor dinner. But the one transferred up here can't be fully assembled and in place. Then at 11, Mrs. Reitzman came. She's one of Mrs. Kennedy's closest friends, and according to everybody who tells me about it, one of the chief motivators and contributors in the whole White House renovation project. She was slim, exquisitely dressed, rather brittle, I thought, and very, very knowledgeable about furniture and decoration. From the trend of her conversation, I believe she thinks not only is the job mostly done, although she mentioned Jackie's hope for new drapes and new chairs in the state dining room, but she feels that additions will come not from major gifts, but from the sale of the guidebook. And she warned me that those revenues should not really be tied up in ordinary upkeep, with which I thoroughly agree. So close was her relationship with Mrs. Kennedy that I doubt that I shall ever have the same degree of interest and commitment from her. But I'm very grateful for what she's already done, and that I wanted to let her know, and do my best to be friends with her. We had lunch shortly after she left. I talked with Jim Ketchum. He's getting Mrs. Marshall Field's picture moved to the East Hall above the sofa. And I told him I would ask for the loan of the Remington and the Russell for Lyndon's business offices. And then Clark Clifford came with a full report from the White House Historical Association. The new guidebook goes to the printer in June. About one out of four persons going through the White House buys it. It will soon go on sale in certain select stores, and it's already on sale in many national parks, as well as two places in the White House, one where you enter and one where you leave. He gave me figures on the maximum number of tourists passing through the house. It was one Saturday in April, and was, I believe, some 26,000. We make about 47 cents off of each paperback guidebook sold, and more off of the hardbacks. Later, I worked at my desk, and then got ready for tonight's dinner, which is the counterpart of the dinner for business last week. This time, it's the labor leaders of the United States. Also black tie, 7:30, about 139 in all. Once more, as we stood in line to greet, I guess, in the blue room, the following cabinet members were on hand: the Dillons, the McNamaras, the Hodges, the Wirtzes, and Walter Heller. I'm getting to feel that I know David Dubinsky, the David MacDonalds, the George Meanies, and the Walter Ruthers very well. And of course, the unique Mr. Jacob Potofsky with his white goatee, and Alex Rose, who causes me to wear hats now more often than I practically ever have, and Jim Suffrage. But I should begin learning more of the others. Andy B. Miller, director of the Department of Legislation of the AFL-CIO, came to Congress when we came to the Senate in 48. He's always on hand with them. And I met William Ball of the United Mine Workers of America, the successor of that old lion of labor, John L. Lewis, and I guess Willie's boss, and a very aristocratic-looking Negro, Mr. A. Philip Randolph, president of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, and incidentally, the only Negro present. But at each of these, I should really try to learn something about at least three or four more of the other couples. After we'd greeted everybody, Lennon took the men into the East Room for the briefing, just as he had the businessmen last week, and the ladies went with me upstairs for a tour of the second floor. I guess Margie and Phyllis are getting to feel like they could go through it blindfolded now. We had bustled all the pieces of the unhung chandelier into a closet in the family dining room and lighted candles so that it too could be included. When we went down to dinner, I found myself with George Meany on my right and Walter Ruther on my left. Walter Ruther is a delightful dinner companion. We talked about the economics of Europe and the political implications of France's intransigence. He used the expression that Germany had only a thin veneer of democracy. Actually, it had just been a series of independent states until late in the 19th century. And democracy is not deep in its blood, whereas Britain has an 800-year heritage of democratic practices and convictions. The implication being, I suppose, that Britain's position as a leader of Europe must not wane. Lyndon raised an eyebrow at me and sent me a note by Jack. So after the singing violins had passed through and coffee was on the table, I rose and said, "May I propose a toast to the labor leaders of our country? They have added to the strength of our economy and the staunchness of our character. What they have done and the cause they have led have made this a better land and a better world." Walter Reuther has spoken with obvious admiration of Germany's economic brawn. He's a very intellectual but pragmatic sort of a man. I like him and find him fascinating to both talk to and listen to, though I feel sure he and Lyndon will be at variance in the future as they have been in the past, because his constituency is homogeneous, I guess, in a way, and now ours is the whole 190 million. And more than anything, I think Lyndon means that when he says that he wants to be president of all the people. We went to the East Room and danced and danced and danced. About 11:30, I took up my position by the door, and after several tries at "Good night, ladies," on the part of the band, with Lyndon keeping right on dancing, getting a new partner as quick as Nade came up and made off with the one he had, the guests all departed about 12. Jesse had been our house guest, leaving about 4:30, and my conscience hurt me that I had spent so little time with him. If there's anybody in all the world we're obligated to comfort now, it's Jesse.